This is Law Bites, a podcast with Michael Geist.
Good evening, honorable senators. I declare open this meeting of the Standing Committee on Legal and Constitutional Affairs. My name is David Arnott. I'm a Saskatchewan senator, and I am chair of this committee. Honourable Senators, we're meeting to continue our study of Bill S-209, an act to restrict young persons' online access to pornographic material.
Bill S-209, the legislative effort led by Senator Julie Melville Deschênes to establish age verification requirements for sites and services that facilitate access to pornography, is back. Formerly Bill S-210, which was the subject of a podcast episode in which I debated Senator Melville Deschênes on the bill, has resurfaced as S-209. It has some modest improvements, but the core concerns, including overbroad scope that includes social media companies and internet providers, the privacy implications of mandated age verification, and the use of website blocking, remain. Last week, I appeared before the Standing Senate Committee on Legal and Constitutional Affairs, where I identified many of the concerns with the bill and engaged in a detailed discussion with multiple senators, including Senator Melville Deschênes. This week's Law Bites podcast takes you inside the hearing room for my opening statement and the Q&A that followed. One small note, I participated in the hearing virtually, and there are a couple of moments of buffering that may affect sound quality. The episode begins with my opening statement.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Michael Geist. I'm a law professor, as you heard, at the University of Ottawa, where I hold the Canada Research Chair in Internet and E-commerce Law, and I'm a member of the Center for Law, Technology, and Society, appearing in a personal capacity representing only my own views. I'd like to thank the committee for the invitation to appear. I had the chance to appear you before on the predecessor bill, S-210, and as committee members may know, I've been critical of its approach. It should go without saying, but just in case, this criticism is not due to the purported objectives of the bill, which are laudable. The problem is this bill is overbroad in scope, intentionally capturing far more than pornography sites, relies on largely foreign-based age verification services, which raise serious privacy concerns, which puts our data sovereignty at risk, and the use of court-mandated website blocking contemplates restricting access to lawful content for those entitled to view it. Allow me to expand on each. First, the bill's preamble states, and I'll quote, "A significant proportion of the pornographic material accessed online is made available on the internet for commercial purposes, in particular through pornographic websites." That's how I think many would understand this bill. Yet Senator Melville Deschênes told this committee, and I'll quote, "Bill S-209 does not just target porn platforms like Pornhub. The bill leaves this decision to government, the government in Article 12, and the government will decide on the scope. So government could decide to include social media like X in its choices." Respectfully, that is not how the bill is drafted. The default is that social media and other services are subject to its requirements, and the government could later work to exclude them by passing the necessary regulations. Indeed, I think many Canadians would be stunned to learn that the bill, as drafted, covers social media sites such as X or Reddit, internet and wireless service providers simply providing connectivity, and AI services such as ChatGPT. As it stands, all of these services, relied upon by millions of Canadians, would be required to verify the ages of their users or face penalties and potential blocking from Canada. Second, the reliance on age verification or age estimation services at this time raises significant privacy concerns. In the age of age estimation, it simply doesn't work very well for this use case of distinguishing between, say, a 17-year-old and an 18-year-old. Moreover, we know that age estimation is less accurate for those with darker skin tones, meaning that the burdens of increased data disclosures and privacy risks will inequitably fall on racialized communities and persons of color. White Canadians are more likely to be able to rely on age estimation, while persons of color will be forced to surrender their government IDs. For millions of Canadians of all backgrounds, there will be privacy risks due to Bill S-209 to simply use the internet or a social media service. There are already cases of data breaches involving government IDs, including most recently tens of thousands of IDs collected by a third-party service provider that was used by Discord. Moreover, at the very time when there's been a growing emphasis on data sovereignty and the desire for Canadians to ensure that their data is well protected, this bill will result in millions being required to disclose that data to private, for-profit, foreign entities to whom, I would say, as we heard from the Privacy Commissioner, enforcement of Canadian privacy laws may be limited. Third, the reliance on blocking sites as an enforcement mechanism remains troubling, and the danger of overblocking legitimate websites raises serious freedom of expression concerns, particularly since our past experience suggests that overblocking is a likely outcome of blocking systems. In fact, the bill expressly states that blocking non-pornographic material is permitted. Widespread website blocking will increase the cost of internet access, it may violate the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, and could well result in retaliation from other countries as violations of our trade obligations. The net effect of this bill as drafted is this: a service, say X to use the senator's example, will be required to obtain age verification from millions of Canadians. Each will be subject to age verification, with at least the younger and racialized Canadians required to submit government IDs to a third-party foreign-based service with limited protections from Canadian law. If X refuses, the entire service could be blocked in Canada, leading to a constitutional challenge and trade retaliation. This could be replicated with ChatGPT, Reddit, and dozens of others. Is it really the intent of this committee to support a bill that expressly contemplates nationwide blocking of non-pornography sites used by millions of Canadians? If so, I think it should go on the record so that Canadians know what is at stake. If not, I think the bill needs to be scrapped or at least significantly amended. I look forward to your questions.
First up for questions was Senator Batters. She focused on the use of a device-based approach for age verification.
Just a quick follow-up question to Professor Geist. And nice to see you again. And what I wanted to ask you is, you were detailing a number of the reasons that you are not in favor of this bill. I just wanted to confirm that you would also not be in favor of having a device-based approach, as has been advocated by Pornhub.
Well, thanks, Senator, for the question. I think there are a number of different ways that we can be thinking about this. And, you know, we've seen proposals from about a device-based approach. We've seen, frankly, many of the different platforms come up with different approaches. We heard, your committee heard, I believe, from the UK Lord talking about Twitter using emails and scanning the internet as their system is somehow an appropriate system. I think that there are real concerns and challenges with many of these different approaches. But my concern at the moment with this bill is that whatever approach might get used, it's being applied well beyond the harms that we just heard from Professor Benedet, and well beyond pornographic websites. And so the concern here is scope, it's website blocking, and it is the privacy-related issues from many of the kinds of technological solutions that are currently being used to try to address this issue.
Right. I just want to go back to my question, though, about specifically device-based and what Pornhub is advocating. And perhaps you heard the individual from Google who had testified on the previous panel when she talked about the type of ID requirements just to access the internet if a device-based approach was used. And would that be your concern as well?
Right. Well, two things. First, to be clear, your bill right now requires potentially the age verification to access the internet. Internet providers, wireless providers, are covered by this legislation as currently drafted. So the issue is that's first. In terms of the device-based, there, I think, are real concerns about a device-based system. Shared devices and otherwise, I think, raises some real challenges as well. And so I don't think it is the silver bullet, the real solution here. But at the same time, as I say, you've got age estimation, which raises significant concerns for racialized Canadians, given what we know about how those systems work. You age verification with government ID, clearly, we heard it from Professor Laidlaw as well, raises significant issues from a privacy perspective in terms of the breaches. There is no perfect solution here. And so if in the trade-offs, we say there is a need to do something, what then becomes essential is ensuring that we have narrowed the scope of this so that we are dealing with a very specific limited harm, not applying this as broadly as this legislation currently does apply.
Then came Senator Maville Deschenes. As you'll hear, she came ready with multiple questions on scope, privacy, and the inclusion of Twitter or X within the bill.
Monsieur Geist, je vais vous poser ma question
Mr.
en
Geist, I'll be asking my question in French. Do you have simultaneous interpretation? Good. So I'm obviously a tad surprised by your testimony because it squarely contradicts the testimony of the Privacy Commissioner, Philippe Duchesne. You claim that I've broadened the scope of the legislation, which is inaccurate, because the purpose of the legislation has always been pornographic material, explicit material, and what I'm attempting to do under 12.1a is to give the authority to the governor and council of the government to determine what is included and what is captured and what is not captured by the legislation. And by doing so, well, expanding the scope of the bill, that's completely contradictory, is it not? So that's my first question. Secondly, if I understand correctly, you're completely in disagreement with Philippe Duchesne, the Privacy Commissioner, who stated that he supported the bill because I restricted the scope of application of the legislation and because I enhanced the criteria for age verification to ensure that privacy rights are upheld. So in your opinion, the Privacy Commissioner, who is mandated primarily to guarantee privacy, is wrong and that you are right. Second question, X. As you know, in Great Britain, not only do porn sites, but social network sites are captured by the legislation, and X didn't say that they're going to leave, that nor that they're going to break the law. They are just going to check not only emails, but also use age verification and comply with the legislation. So you're forecasting the worst, but the worst eventuality doesn't always occur, does it?
Okay, thank you, Senator. There's a lot of questions there. Let me try to make sure that I get through all of them. First, with respect to the scope of the legislation, I think it's pretty clear the way the legislation is drafted. Section 6, combined with Section 5, makes it clear that this covers everyone who, let's say, in Section 5, makes available this content. So in Section 5, making any organization for commercial purposes that makes this available is covered by the legislation. You don't need a regulation for that. Everybody is covered. There's an attempt to clarify the potential for some limitation here in Section 6, but based even on some of the interpretations I've heard from some of the committee, the argument would be even a site like Twitter, social media would be covered. And I heard you just a couple of days ago at a conference talk about how these social media companies play a significant role. Section 12, with respect to the government establishing regulations, does not say that the government sets who is included. It says who may be excluded. The default in your legislation is that everybody is in. And then in Section 12.1, the government may make regulations specifying the circumstances whereby someone is excluded. The default for all these services is that they are in. And I think that any prudent company will look at that legislation and say the way they have to comply is to comply or exit the market or find some mechanism to deal with some of these issues. So I think that's what you've structured. If, and I think it would be improvement, if you said that the only time anyone is subject to this is once the government and council has established regulations that would include them. So in other words, you're not in by default, you are only in when the regulations so say, that would actually, I think, go a long way to addressing some of the scope-related concerns. With respect to the Privacy Commissioner's comments, I heard the Commissioner express some support for age verification. What I also heard the Commissioner acknowledge quite explicitly is that his ability to enforce the law with any sort of penalties over these violations is extremely limited. In fact, there are, of course, no at the moment penalties that are available to the commissioner in enforcing the law. This is enhanced or becomes an increasingly problematic concern with respect to the very companies that would be providing these services. They are invariably foreign-based entities for which the Privacy Commissioner has even less ability to enforce the law. And so where there are breaches, and as we have heard, there are going to be breaches, the ability for the Commissioner to do much of anything is exceptionally limited. With respect, your third question, with respect to Twitter, I read the comments of Lord Bethel. And I must admit, I was rather stunned to hear him speak somewhat approvingly of Twitter's approach to trying to stay in the country, and an approach in which what I believe he said was, we ask users to submit their email address, and then we scan the internet for everything we can find about them, and then use that together with unseen AI algorithms to determine whether or not this person is of age or not. This kind of surveillance-based approach is so anti-privacy, it is stunning to see, frankly, a regulator or Lord Bethel suggest that somehow this is an appropriate approach for making this kind of determination. It is something that we should roundly reject.
Senator Prosper, having heard much of the criticism, was curious if I thought the bill could be saved.
I have a question for Professor Geist and Professor Laidlaw. And what we've been hearing through testimony related to this particular bill is obviously the intent of it, but also there's been quite a bit of discussion in terms of the level of detail that is, or lack of detail within it. And one of the justifications we heard was, with evolving technology, you don't want to overly prescribe. We heard earlier you don't want to go back and amend and amend. You want to have a legislative framework that can adjust to a changing environment and be responsive to that. But what I'm hearing from you, Ms. Laidlaw, is with your suggested amendments, what I'm getting from that is you're thinking that leaving things to regulations is just not sufficient to address for purposes of the points you raised. Professor Geist, if I were to consider your evidence, I guess it's a little more harsh. I think you used the word scrap, the legislation. But I know you mentioned certain things with respect to data sovereignty being overly broad, some issues with respect to persons of color and potentially for them to be racialized because of the technology is not really there to really. So I guess when I think about an approach to be, a legislative framework being, not as prescriptive, it's your position that no level of vagueness will remedy this piece of legislation, that it's best scrapped.
First, I appeared before a number of committees when we were dealing with Bill C-11 and Bill C-18. And one of the primary concerns about that legislation, frankly, had we had hearings on C-63, the online harms bill, we would have dealt with it there, is that too often there has been a tendency to punt on some of the really hard questions and leave them for either a future regulator like the CRTC or for future regulations. And I think what we have seen as some of these bills have unfolded, in the case both of the online streaming bill and the online news bill, is that this itself creates real harm. There is confusion in the marketplace. We end up in the courts. We actually don't get to where we want to get to because there hasn't been sufficient clarity from the legislator and has left too much for later on. And so I do think it's incumbent to, within this legislation, be very specific and precise. Now, my concern here is not whether or not there's regulation on this issue. It's, in a sense, what exactly are you trying to achieve with this bill? If it is, as is referred to in the preamble, about dealing with the Pornhub, I don't hear people saying it's hard to define or that privacy trumps, respectfully. What I do hear is people saying, yeah, that's a real issue, and we need to find a way to deal with it. The problem, I think, that arises is that we've also got, the sponsor of the bill telling committee, no, this can apply to social media as well. We see many references to X as part of that discussion. And so is the intent to deal with, for this to apply to X? Is it to apply to some of these sites? I must admit, I hear members of this committee and the sponsor of the bill suggest that it is. And if that is in fact the case, then I think this is enormously problematic. It is overbroad. It is not a matter of requiring people, men who want to want to access porn to age verify. What it is actually doing is requiring everyone to age verify, regardless of their purposes, to engage in just regular conversation, to use a chat bot, to use from such as generative AI, to use a search engine, to use any sorts of social media companies. That strikes me as wholly unreasonable, given the more specific, narrow goal of dealing specifically with porn sites, where I think, frankly, just about everybody is aligned that it is appropriate to find a mechanism to ensure that only those who meet a particular age can access that content.
Senator Simons turned to the issue of website blocking, focusing specifically on whether or not it might be constitutional and the concerns that might arise from mandated blocking of even legal content.
I want to pick up where Professor Geist just left off, and I want to look specifically at Section 10.5A of the bill, which says that if the federal court determines that it is necessary is not defined, to ensure that pornographic material is not made available to young persons on the Internet in Canada, an order may be made which would have the effect of preventing persons in Canada from being able to access A, material other than pornographic material made available by the organization that has been given notice under subsection 9.1. Now, it would seem to me that if you put a clause like 5A in, you're perforce suggesting that you would block a site that doesn't just have pornography. Would that be the way you would read that as well?
Thanks, Senator Simons. Yes, I certainly agree. Frankly, I don't even see how this part of the bill is constitutional. To explicitly say that we're going to block legitimate content. Let's recognize it's actually two elements of people being blocked. It's both the content itself, which we readily acknowledge is lawful content and not even pornographic content that's being blocked, and it is people who are entitled to view it. It's literally all Canadians, not just underage Canadians. It is all Canadians who are blocked from being able to access that. That strikes me as wholly disproportionate and unlikely to survive constitutional scrutiny. And let's recognize as well that website blocking, in our experience, overblocks all the time. And so when TELUS blocked years ago, attempting to block a single union site, it blocked 600 other sites, including a breast cancer fundraising site at the same time. This is imperfect. And the notion that somehow we ought to trust that these companies are going to ultimately find a way to cooperate, as we heard one senator suggest earlier, I heard the same thing with respect to Meta and the online news bill. And 2.5 years later, we don't have any links to news on that platform. When companies make it clear that there are red lines about what they are willing to comply with, and frankly, requiring millions and millions of Canadians to engage in age verification strikes me as the kind of red line. Many of those same companies are either going to challenge you in court or they're going to simply walk away.
Senator Wells continued that discussion, focusing particularly on the constitutionality of Bill S-209.
My question will be to Dr. Geist and Dr. Laidlaw. And you may not be able to answer this in the scope of time and would welcome your written feedback on this, but if we were looking at this through this proposed legislation, should it pass in its current form, through the lens of the Charter, I'm just interested in your sense of would it comply, or where would the Charter breaches or concerns be, sort of a mini Charter analysis, if I'm not just putting you on the spot here. Again, I'd welcome, I'm sure the committee would, a written submission with more detail. So perhaps first to Dr. Geist, then to Dr. Laidlaw.
Sure, thanks for that, Senator. Well, I just highlighted at least one example. So I think the notion of including website blocking with an express permission to the court, as if court needs permission in this, an express permission that the court can block lawful content as part of a blocking order strikes me as something that would be very tough to sustain, because let's recognize when you combine that with the scope of this legislation, we are not just blocking what most would conceive of as pornographic websites. We are blocking sites, let's say, to stick with Twitter X. Of course, there is pornography on we all recognize there's some pornography on that site. But the notion, and I think one of your earlier witnesses talked about the percentage of youth that may access it as being quite high, but that's not really the relevant metric. The relevant metric, if you are Twitter or X, is what percentage of that site is porn. And it's a tiny percentage of the overall traffic on a site that has literally billions and billions of tweets or comments that take place on that site at all times. So it's a very small proportion. And yet it too would in theory be covered here based on the coverage. So too search, so too image-based generative AI. I mean, the list is enormous. Reddit certainly would be covered as part of this conversation as well. And so I think that given the scope, I must admit that I think from the freedom of expression provisions within the charter begin to kick in here as well. And it would have it would be challenging to ensure that given the broad scope that has been, I think, quite deliberately used, because we've heard senators say, yes, we think that it can apply here as well. You end up with something that's, I think, open to challenge. I'll just quickly close that, you know, if you flip the approach and you say that the only way someone is covered by this is by way of regulation, I think that you protect yourself, at least with respect to the scope issue, from a constitutional perspective, because then you're ensuring the governor and council is going through that more fulsome analysis as to who is really intended to be covered here, and they are including them by way of regulation.
Senator Saint-Germain was focused on the issue of security breaches. She highlights a recent security breach, noting some of the risks that might arise within the context of this bill and the use of age verification technologies, and seeking to explore the implications for S209.
My question would be for you, Professor Geist. Before I ask it, I want to put something on the record of this committee. We received at our last meeting Lord Bethell of the UK House of Lords, who didn't seem to be overly concerned about the risk of the impact or of a data breach relative to the benefit for the protection of children. On data breaches, he said in front of this committee, and I quote him, "So far, so good. Listen, there will be a data breach. Of course there will. Whenever you have a collection of data, some of it will leak out somewhere. That hasn't happened anywhere so far," end of quote. Well, he was right. On the day he appeared before this committee, a serious data breach was reported in the UK, but also in other countries using a third-party age verification system. In an article published this morning, the UK-based law firm Kennedy Law had this to say, and I quote, "While the new legislation was implemented for the explicit purpose of protecting children from adult content, it also brings with it an unintended consequence. Platforms complying with the rules could become prime targets for cyber criminals. Verified identity data is a high-value prize, linking real identities to online activity, and if compromised, it could have implications far beyond the law's well-intentioned aims." So my two questions for you, Professor Geist, are the following. Do you believe this recent breach in the UK is evidence that if we adopt soon S209, similar breaches will affect law-abiding adults in Canada and even teenagers, and that would be putting their data at risk first? And in your opinion, is this bill salvageable, including in reference to the recommendations for amendments that Ms. Laidlaw gave to us minutes ago in her testimony?
Thank you for the question, Senator. And I actually think that security breach, data breaches, can't be viewed as unintended consequences. Respectfully, they are going to be intended because they are foreseeable at this stage. Essentially, if you pass this legislation as is, you must go in knowing that there will be these breaches. It's not that you intend for them to happen, but they are entirely foreseeable. They are virtually guaranteed. As I mentioned, they are more likely to affect racialized Canadians and persons of color than they are others, given the fact that the attempt to find less invasive technology like age estimation doesn't work nearly as well due to darker skin tones. And so the reality is, this isn't a risk, this is a guarantee. In fact, I think just in this, over the last hour, we've now heard of multiple breaches that have taken place with exactly this kind of technology. And so those risks are real. They are compounded by the fact that the privacy commissioner directly told you that his ability to mete out punishments where these breaches occur, much less seek to enforce Canadian law against service providers, virtually all of whom, as far as I know, are not in Canada. It is positively stunning to think that this legislation would require millions of Canadians to send their government-issued IDs and other identification outside of the country, largely beyond the effective scope of the privacy commissioner from an enforcement perspective. That is the trade-off that takes place here, which is why it is so essential that if we're going to move in this, that the gains, the benefits have to be very clear and we have to limit the risks as much as possible. As I, in my opening statement, I said, frankly, I think it should be scrapped. And Professor Laidlaw, I think, provided the right course of action. We know online harms is going to come back. This is essentially dealing with an online harm. The right place to deal with this is in the legislation that follows from Bill C-63, which would bring it within a broader framing with more effective enforcement and administration.
Finally, Senator Dillon talks about the issue of access or underage access to pornography sites, and if not S-209, what might be done about it.
I'll direct this to Professor Geist and Professor Laidlaw very quickly, but before I ask a question, I just want to remind everyone, put it on record, that we have evidence here about the harm that children are suffering and that there's enough validated evidence to treat early porn exposure as a public health issue and not an educational issue and not just moral panic. So there is a great desire and a great urgency to deal with this issue. How we get to it, the vehicle, the instruments that we use, is what it questions. So there's no question that we all agree there's harm that our children are suffering every day, that we delay some type of effort in protecting them. So, and there's one witness also said that sometimes you got to take the kitchen sink approach to come at this for the betterment of all and the betterment and the protection of our children. We're also talking about here access, privacy rights, and balancing that against the harm that our children are suffering. So I'm no law professor, so I'll have you correct any of what I'm saying here today. But certainly the expression of someone's right to expression is guaranteed, but there's certainly no guarantees to access that expression. And so part of there are limited scopes and limited places where there's guarantees around access. But in this instance, in this scope, I would argue that that's not a guarantee. And when we talk about the protection of one's privacy, I go back to what the Privacy Commissioner of Canada said, that laws that are based on principles, that's what we're doing here, working with principles. And then we are going to rely on the Governing Council. And as you said, Professor Laidlaw, the trust that we place and the confidence that we have in the regulations that come following the principles that we put in place here. So with that, I suppose the question I'm asking here is that, do you agree that in this instance, balancing the harm, keeping in mind the harm, understanding that access is not a right, and the ability to address the issues around privacy breaches when the privacy commissioner has said, when he was here, that there's no expectation and that there would be follow-up. And I take your point, Professor Geist, that the privacy commissioner did say that there's more teeth that we can provide to him when it comes to following through with some of the penalties. Putting that aside for a second, that when we approach it from that perspective, is this not a good step forward? Is this not the right move? Is this not the right thing to do today?
Yeah, thanks, Senator. I guess I would say I'm not here to argue that you have to have a right to pornography. I'm fine with seeking to regulate that access. The problem with this bill is that there are rights, I think, to access the internet. There are rights to engage in legitimate expression outside of the pornography world, and there are rights to privacy. And this bill undermines all three. And so, no, it is not an appropriate trade-off, particularly when there are alternatives available to deal with these harms, particularly through an Online the Harms bill, which will be more effective, more likely to survive constitutional scrutiny, and not put or jeopardize some of those other rights at the same time. That's the Law Bites podcast for this week. If you have comments, suggestions, or other feedback, write to lawbites@pobox.com. That's LAWBYTES at pobox.com. Follow the podcast on Twitter at lawbitespod or follow Michael Geist at mgeist. You can download the latest episodes from my website at michaelgeist.ca or subscribe at iTunes, Google, or Spotify. The Law Bites podcast is produced by Gerardo Lebron LeBoy. Music by the LeBoy brothers, Gerardo and Jose Lebron LeBoy. Credit information for clips featured in this podcast can be found in the show notes at michaelgeist.ca. I'm Michael Geist. Thanks for listening and see you next time.